I'm Mike Sainsbury, and welcome to this ASI cast. Recently, Kantar published the latest iteration of their Dimensions research, which sets out to provide an overview of the changing attitudes of online connected consumers over time. A mix of qualitative and quantitative data, the study seeks to establish key consumer trends and concerns across China, the US, Brazil, and the UK. In this ASI cast, our research director, Richard Marks, talks to the chief executive of Kantar's media division, Andy Brown, about some of the key findings of this year's report. They start by discussing the subject that has drawn most attention in the press, how consumers are pushing back on advertising, feeling there's too much of it, and that it's not to be trusted.
So welcome to the podcast, Andy. We're here primarily to talk about the Dimension study that you recently launched. It's been running, I think, for a few years now. What was the original brief you gave for the study, and how's it evolved over time?
Yeah, thanks, Richard. I mean, the study's been running now for 3 years. The original brief, obviously, as a research agency, we do lots of proprietary work for clients. We have a lot of syndicated surveys that we run. But we felt we didn't have a piece which gave a kind of an overview of what consumers were thinking, in particular what digital consumers were thinking, or connected consumers, as we call them. So really, it was to create a piece of insight that looked at consumers' attitudes across paid, owned, and earned media. And we really, as much as possible, wanted to track their attitudes and opinions over time. And it works by linking really a quantitative assessment of these connected consumers, who we define as a consumer who has at least two or more connected devices connected to the internet, with insights and perspective from practitioners in the media industry.
And how do you go about gathering the data? Because it's a mix of qualitative and quantitative insights, isn't it?
Indeed. So it's what we've used, what I would call an expert panel as part of the methodology. So in four countries, we invite a group of typically around 10 to 12 practitioners in the industry. They may be advertisers, media owners, media agencies. And we ask them about what they see as the key trends in their industry. What are the things that they're worrying about with consumers? And we then supplement that with a quantitative online survey in four markets that are broadly representative of the world. Simply, we can't afford to do field work everywhere, so we do it in four markets around the world.
Which are
China, the US, Brazil, and the UK.
And this is the third one you've done. Is it a tracking study in the sense you're going back and asking exactly the same questions, or are you mixing it up as it evolves?
We've tried to keep a degree of consistency year over year in the questions so that we can follow some trends that might have come to the fore in the last 12 months in the intervening period between field work. So some of it's continuous, so we're able to track things like, you know, ad blocking, for example. Has ad blocking grown over time or is it decreasing? But then we might pull out a new topic, which is new to the survey, which is looking more around trust in advertising sources and other earned media sources, which is something we put a lot more detail into in the latest wave of the survey.
I think the thing that seems to have got the initial early press coverage on this survey, and perhaps more noticeably than the earlier surveys, has been the focus on not so much consumer ad avoidance, but on a consumer disinterest in advertising and the phrase saturation of advertising, and whether that's we've hit the point where consumers are starting to push back against too much advertising. Can you talk us through what the surveys uncovered, why its significance, and whether, I guess equally, whether you feel the press coverage has correctly summed up what the survey's been finding?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting observation, Richard. I think you're right. If you look over the last 3 years, and we've talked quite a bit about ad blocking, ad blocking now is sort of plateauing. So if you look at the study, somewhere around 54% of consumers are blocking. It's not really going up or down. But what we are seeing is attitudinally a greater level of pushback, if you will, against advertising. I think there's a feeling that there is too much advertising, And I think one of the most interesting things, it talks about, the sort of consumers talk about overexposure to ads. Mm. It's somewhat ironic, and I personally view this as coming from the digital side or the online advertising side, is that people are very conscious of how many times they're being hit with the same ad, possibly sometime after they've purchased or made a search for a particular product or a particular brand. And I think it's somewhat ironic, given in theory the technology within ad serving companies has the capability to cap exposure, that it doesn't seem to be happening, at least in the reality that the consumers that have completed our survey feel right now. So I think there is that concern. I think the other piece around it, Richard, is around how people perceive advertising from a trust perspective. So one of the interesting innovations in the survey this year is, as well as asking where do people go to find out about brands and subjects that they're interested in, we also ask them how much do they trust those different sources as sources of information. And what we then did was to divide one of those sources into, or one of those answers into the other. So if we look at the total number of people who use a particular channel for information, and we divide that by the number of people who trust it, we've created what we've called a trust index. Mm. And if you go across whatever it is, about 10 different channels that we've measured, which range from asking your friends and family for information about brand or subject through to advertising, advertising scores the lowest index at 33, versus friends and family at the other end of 78. Now, in between, you've got interesting numbers around 53 if you look at newspaper and magazine articles. So again, it suggests that, you know, there is a role for earned media as a trustful source of information about a brand alongside paid. And certainly it suggests, you know, a higher value. Social media, which we've broken out, sits somewhere between the two at 46%.
Mm. I think one of the piece of press coverage I saw also highlighted the issue around whether consumers know what's advertising and what isn't advertising, whether their definition of advertising is not what the industry's definition of advertising is. Is that something that...
Yeah, that's something that's come out consistently through the three waves of the survey. You know, they are very literate around commercial communications of all types, and they will quite often describe things that people in the industry might call owned content as advertising. So they put it all into that wrapper of advertising. So yes, I think there is this very well documented literacy around consumers now, and wariness about all forms of commercialism.
So what do advertisers do about that? I mean, what's, obviously you were talking to industry experts as well as the general public. What's your take on how this saturation can be dealt with? How can brands talk through that to actually reach consumers?
I think people have to be respectful of the consumer, to recognise that consumers are bombarded with different messages, and, you know, as we were just alluding to, they see them all as advertising, whether it's a commercial message on a website that is linked to a particular brand, or whether it's an ad. So I think there's a recognition that people are going to have lots of exposure. So key for me would be relevance, you know, talking to our clients and taking data back from the survey, a relevance. You know, it needs to be relevant to me. Getting the frequency right is important. You know, there's lots of work done on what's effective frequency. Different people have very different views. But one thing that is clear is that at the moment, other things being equal, it would suggest that frequency is too high. Is the feedback we're getting from consumers is there's too much exposure. What do you do about that? Well, perhaps we could make some of these capping algorithms actually work. But I think most importantly is just to recognise that you know, you might be the media agency planning the media campaign, and you've, you know, built your digital campaign, and you've built in a X number of exposures of the ad against your target audience. But remember that the PR company or the client themselves are directly targeting those people. So the danger is that the consumer is inundated. Our view is that you also have to join this stuff together. You know, the whole point, we talk about connected intelligence, about being able to get the balance right and the right audiences across paid, owned and earned media channels.
Mm-hmm. Well, the connecting it is the challenge, though, isn't it? Because the most common thing people say in your study, and just across a number of studies and anecdotally, is that people get, I keep getting stalked. I try to buy something and then that product stalked me through the internet. And the challenge there is that if you go on, you know, Amazon and three or four other electronic sites, look at the same product, buy it on one, the other three don't know you bought it on the other. They just have you down as an incomplete and spend the next month trying to remind you that you didn't buy it on their site and pop up in various places.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting piece here, and it's there's it can be an opportunity or it can be a scary threat. I think that when you look at, and it plays to this bigger piece around first party data and third party data or syndicated data, and I think our industry at the moment, we've got what you want to call them, big walled gardens, big first-party data sets, and they're all incredibly valuable. And there's a little bit of a honeymoon period with this. Everybody's wildly excited about the digital databases that they've built. So I've got, for the first time, because I've got direct communication with my consumer, I can see, you know, broadly what they've been exposed to, at least from me. I know what they've then done with that, and they've gone and bought it, and I can try and sell them more. What I can't do is to see, to your point, Richard, what happens over the side of my garden wall as to what they're doing with my competitors. And what are they doing? How do I grow my business by taking away from competitors? The answer is that's very difficult if you're reliant entirely on first-party data. So our view increasingly is that people are going to start to bridge and aggregate and integrate data sets in order to get that holistic view. So instead of just looking just at my first party data, let's bridge that with broader, sometimes deterministic data sets and sometimes probabilistic data sets in order to give that holistic view. And there's a parallel there actually in audience measurement. You know, when one looks at one of the themes that came out of the report is that audience measurement is a team sport, as we describe it here. Why do we say that? Well, first of all, I think it's impossible for any research agency to be able to measure everything on their own without the support of the industry in order to tag or to cooperate in some form of data sharing exercise. But I think the other piece as to why we call it a team sport is that, you know, take Netflix, for example. Netflix are very proud of the fact that they don't use television ratings. They don't need them. And they can, you know, determine the performance of a new series, the actors that they want in a series, how long the series should be, all on the basis of people, you know, accessing their platform or, you know, viewing content through their platform. In a world where you have 8 Netflix, or versions of Netflix, one might be called Disney Plus, one might be called Hulu, one might be called Discovery, and on top of that, you also have you know, the terrestrial broadcasters and satellite broadcasters. Suddenly, and imagine the audience share for Netflix or subscription for Netflix is no longer increasing at the rate it currently is, and is in fact going down. What's the first question Reed Hastings is going to ask? I would imagine his first question is, where's my audience going to? How can I see that through my own platform? So we need to find a way to start integrating these data sets into panel solutions and into currency grade solutions.
But at what level, though? Because I have to say, at the moment, I've got, you know, as someone involved in audience measurement, I am not wouldn't describe myself as neutral, but even I, if I work for Netflix at the moment, I absolutely would not be sharing my data with anyone else because I have no advertising, so I have no need to do it. And the commercial benefit I might get from a bit of quid pro quo on seeing other people's data would absolutely be negated by other people seeing, particularly the companies you mentioned are about to launch their own streaming services, you know, ITV and BBC with BritBox, Disney, desperate for information about how Netflix is doing. I'd want to keep that absolutely. I take your point. In 5 years' time, they might.
That's
on the
what
way,
I'm saying.
On the way down, they might want
that,
it.
That, but that's my point. I think on the way down, whether on the way up, no, I'm totally with you, Richard. There's no rationale. There's no immediate reason for Netflix to want to participate. But as it becomes more competitive, you know, first-party data has got severe limits to it. And they'll begin to plateau. And the first question will be, where's my audience gone? And unless you have some way of finding that out by integration with another source, you're going to be struggling to grow that business again.
Do you agree with your former boss, Sir Martin Sorrell, who I think about 3 or 4 years ago was absolutely convinced that Netflix could not succeed without advertising, that it was a sham business model in the sense that it would need advertising at some point? Do you agree with that?
The answer, yeah, I do kind of agree with it. And I agree with it in the sense that, you know, again, it comes back to this point when there are 10 versions of Netflix with different brands all competing, there is a finite capacity that any consumer has to keep paying for content.